This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on an early April Tuesday. A quarter of a century after bald eagles, which were considered an endangered species at the time, began dying at lakes near Hot Springs, researchers finally have a more complete picture of what caused the deaths of more than 70 of the birds. We now know the eagles died because of a specific algae that lives on a specific invasive water plant and makes a novel toxin, but only in the presence of specific pollutants. As Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us, researchers who have been chipping away at the mystery for years have finally identified that specific pollutant as bromide.
In the mid-1990s, dozens of bald eagles started dying around a gray lake.
The Gray Lake is a 13,400-acre Corps of Engineers reservoir.
That's Sean Lusk. He's a fisheries management biologist at the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission.
It's located about 30 minutes south of Hot Springs, just a little north of Arkadelphia. It's relatively unproductive, so there's not a lot of nutrients that come into the lake. And because of that, the water's really clear, which attracts a lot of recreational boaters. The Gray's got a really diverse fishery. It's kind of unique for this part of the world.
One of Lusk's colleagues at the agency is Jennifer Ballard. She's the state wildlife veterinarian and assistant chief of the research division at AGFC.
It's kind of an interesting case study that's used in training wildlife veterinarians. So I remember studying it in school and being in native Arkansan, I remember it happening. So what essentially happened is there were these fairly sudden reports in the winter of coots that behaved abnormally and also sick eagles that had neurologic signs. So they didn't have a normal behavior, normal posture.
According to reports, the birds were flying into cliffs and trees. Their wings drooped and they stumbled around on the ground. Over the course of several years, more than 70 eagles were found dead, mostly at DeGray Lake. Ballard says the University of Georgia, which has the oldest wildlife disease research facilities in the country, stepped in to help with the investigation, which they were able to narrow down to the cyanobacteria, or blue-green algae, that liked growing on an invasive plant called hydrilla.
They kind of narrowed it down that the coots were eating the plant with the cyanobacterium on it. They were being exposed to an unknown toxin, and when it affected them and they behaved abnormally, they became easy prey for the eagles who were consuming them. And when they consumed them, they started demonstrating the same signs.
The hydrilla eventually disappeared from the landscape for reasons we'll get into later. But researchers at the University of Georgia continued investigating the eagle mortalities.
They finally, after all these years, did this brilliant piece of sort of collaborative interdisciplinary research, genetics and an amazing amount of biochemistry to isolate the toxin. And they have identified the toxin. They have found that bromide in the environment contributes to the toxin being produced.
The toxin that then leads to brain lesions that lead to the symptoms displayed by the eagles at DeGray Lake. The results of this two decades of research were published in the March 26th issue of Science magazine. Susan Wild, who is an associate professor of aquatic science at the University of Georgia, is one of the co-authors of the study titled Hunting the Eagle Killer.
My research focuses on primarily impaired aquatic systems, like triage ecology.
Wild says she didn't learn of the eagle mortality event at DeGray Lake until 2001, when eagles started dying in a similar fashion at a lake in South Carolina.
And one of the things I learned a lot from was the public television show Saving the Eagles that was put it out in 1998, I believe, and you can see the conclusion to that they're just like, well, we think it's probably a toxin, but we just don't know yet. So that helped me to see what the site looked like, what the investigators were considering, what had been excluded.
While researchers didn't know what the toxin was just yet, the information they had at the time did conclusively diagnose the disease as a new phenomenon in eagles.
So that's a pretty important clue that it was something novel on the landscape that that caused this, most likely.
The cause of the eagle deaths was referred to as avian vacular myelinopathy. Although researchers now know that fish and other wildlife are also susceptible to the toxin that causes AVM and creates holes in the brains and spinal cords of affected animals. Wild says so far the toxin has only been found in man-made reservoirs in the southeast.
Often those reservoirs will be open habitat for an invasive species to come in and set up shop. And hydrilla just became so dense in so many systems across the southeast.
That includes the system at DeGray Lake. Wild says the hydrilla creates surface area for the blue-green algae to grow on. It also creates an attractive habitat for migratory birds like coots. Eagles and other predatory birds move in after that when they notice an abundance of prey that's become disoriented by a neurotoxin.
You know, it's called an ecological trap. When you have habitat that appears to be very good habitat, but is in fact, they're not able to reproduce, and it might even be fatal to them. So a fatal attraction.
As Wild and her team discovered, one of the key components of the fatal attraction in the case of DeGray Lake and others like it was bromide.
And it turns out that in plants, some of them, and in particular hydrilla, can hyperaccumulate, can actually take up more bromide than the sediment has. So they're actually a great source of bromide, which is where the cyanobacteria are growing. So that was like the final molecule they needed to build the toxin. And then they're the ones that make it, but only in the presence of sufficient amounts of this bromide.
While there are naturally occurring instances of bromide, humans have added a lot more of it into ecosystems through activities like coal mining, water treatment, and driving, which creates exhaust. Wild says part of her research journey included sequencing the DNA of the cyanobacteria she was examining, which led to the discovery of a new species.
But it took me another 10 years to even name the officially name the cyanobacteria, and then a longer still to be able to isolate the fraction from that plant cyanobacterial complex that was actually toxic.
It would take several more years before Wild was able to identify bromide as the culprit. She started by sending her samples to researchers in Germany who specialize in molecules made by cyanobacteria. It then took 2 years to grow enough cyanobacteria for Wild to test in chickens.
And it was negative. We had no sick chickens. We had no lesions. And so it wasn't until the second time growing it up in the presence of bromide that it was producing the toxin. And then when we tested it on chickens, yes, they did get sick.
The German researchers concluded bromide played a role in the production of the toxin after finding a novel molecule in the cyanobacteria growing on the hydrilla. The molecule was unlike anything they've seen before and contained 5 atoms of bromine. Another group of collaborators confirmed the team's work further when it found the cyanobacteria genes likely responsible for synthesizing the toxin. And while the hydrilla at DeGray Lake is long gone, which means the cyanobacteria is too, Wild says having more information about the event makes wildlife managers better equipped for the future.
I guess we had to take it all the way to the final endpoint for people to be convinced that this hypothesis was not just, you know, a probable cause, but it was the cause. And therefore, we do know what the solution is.
But several unanswered questions remain.
So for us, it's really interesting because we're wondering, what's the major source of this bromide?
That's fisheries management biologist Sean Lusk again.
What is the source of this bromide on other lakes? Because, you know, it wasn't just Washita and DeGray where this was happening. I believe there was a lake in Texas and there was a couple lakes out east. So for me, it would be interesting to see what's that common denominator? What do these lakes all have in common? And what's the source of that bromide?
Lusk says that information could be valuable should the hydrilla ever make a comeback on DeGray Lake. For now, though, the reservoir isn't much of a home to hydrilla or any other aquatic plants. After several years of fluctuating lake levels from near record lows to near record highs led to a dramatic decline in vegetation, a problem Lusk is now working to solve.
The vegetation really hasn't rebounded very much. So a couple years ago, we started trying to reestablish aquatic vegetation on the Gray Lake. We're working with four different species right now: coontail, eelgrass, American pondweed, and sago pondweed. and those are all native species. And we're trying to focus all of our areas on, or all of our vegetation work on areas that have the potential to have the most impact on the lake.
Arkansas Game and Fish veterinarian Jennifer Ballard says the information published by Susan Wild and her team is also essential to the agency's ongoing monitoring of eagle health in the state.
We have an ongoing eagle health research project. We continue to watch for this, for similar mortalities to occur. We don't want them to come back. So, and understanding now this bromide component, it really has application that we'll be able to watch, you know, bromide levels in the lake if we need to, and if we need to adjust some of the chemicals that are used to control that vegetation.
Ballard says discussions have already begun about the ways AGFC could figure out where the high levels of bromide came from. And while the toxin has only been identified at a handful of lakes in the southeast, Susan Wild says it's possible it's killing wildlife elsewhere in places where humans haven't detected it yet.
Because unless an eagle is there in a territory that's established and you notice a bird like that goes missing or you find dead and people truly notice it, I think it can slide under the radar.
Wild says that's particularly worrisome as invasive aquatic plants like hydrilla continue to spread across the U.S. and Canada.
And we don't know if the cyanobacteria could be growing on those plants in more locations than we have been able to screen. So we are trying to increase our monitoring and the extent to which we're able to monitor.
One of the easiest and most cost-effective ways of doing that, Wild says, is to partner with reservoir managers who can ship samples of their plants to the University of Georgia.
That is actually the only way I've gotten to look at the Arkansas plants is by having had them sent to me.
Wild also recommends boaters get better acquainted with the vegetation around them, because invasive plants like hydrilla can reproduce from fragments left behind on a boat that's getting moved between waterways.
Just like with everything else, unfortunately, we need to be really mindful about what we're moving around between reservoirs, and just know how to recognize if you are in a location that has the invasive plants.
Locations with invasive plants can be reported to state and national agencies like the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission and the U.S. Geological Survey, or submitted via a smartphone app like iNaturalist.
So it really does help if people recognize species that aren't supposed to be there and report it. That helps us a lot.
And Jennifer Ballard adds, the AGFC also wants to hear from people who come across sick or dead eagles or any other wildlife, as it could be a sign of a problem in their ecosystem. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
The bald eagle population in the United States has rebounded significantly since Wild started her research in 2001. The bird was removed from the endangered species list in 2007. And last month, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced the number of eagles in the contiguous 48 states has quadrupled since 2009 to more than 315,000 individual birds.